Hello and welcome back to the Motor Racing Passion Podcast. I'm Luke Blattman. I'm joined again by Daniel Blattman, and we're going to take a look back at round three of the 2024 TCR Australia Series, which was held at Phillip Island. And I think the biggest thing to come out of round three, Daniel, was Brad Harris with two dominant wins, and he was up the front in race one as well. I mean, that sort of came from the clouds, that performance, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, great speed that we've kind of seen in patches from Brad Harris over the early part of the season, even late last year as well. But yeah, I think the moving up to the current spec Honda Civic has definitely unleashed him this year. And I think minus a few nerves around that second race jump start, he really was quite polished in terms of putting together mistake-free runs across race two and race three to land in victory lane. So it was very well. And I think just to see his progression from when he started last year to now has been great to watch.
Particularly the early laps of race three. I mean, he looked like he could put the car anywhere on the track. And I mean, he just monstered Clay Richards for two laps at the start of race three and almost passed him at will.
Well, that wasn't exactly, it's not like it was just like lights to flag and not anything about it. Yeah, as you said, he was behind Clay Richards off the start and, yeah, just kind of worked him over and put the move on and he was away. So, yeah, I think that would have been really satisfying from the speed, but also, having to overtake some cars and obviously, get his team to fight some battles off the track as well.
It's a good look for the series as well because obviously the Harris brothers have stepped up into a national series from sort of more sort of state level racing. And although they've got a really good team in Wall Racing, so they've got a good car in the Honda, but it's an encouraging sign. It shows that you can step up and be competitive.
Absolutely. I think it shows, and this is what we've talked about multiple times about what's the DNA or what is TCR racing in Australia. And I think this is really good because it's showing a pathway from improved production. I think even the Harrises had a bit of a sports sedan background. And obviously we've seen from the Toyota 86s, which is seeing some strong progression from a number of drivers over previous years. And obviously this year with Clay Richards and Ryan Casher. So, I think it's super positive. And I think this is, how the category needs to position itself. So obviously we've spoken before about, continuing to grow entries and build some strength across the board. So, I think that it's a great little promotion for what Brad Harris has achieved here. And as I said before, what Clay Richards has been doing in a short amount of time as well.
The closest thing that came to a mistake from Brad Harris was the little touch he gave Tony D'Alberto on the opening lap of race one, which obviously put D'Alberto out and gave Harris a penalty, and it let Josh Buchan through to take a very dominant race one win. But that really defined D'Alberto's weekend because he got the pole by, what was it, 0.4 of a second or so, and got the start, was leading into Honda hairpin on the first lap. And, I mean, he never recovered from there because he finished outside the top 10 in the end of race one, which put him off the back then for race two, and then that had him down the order for race three. So his weekend could have gone very differently. And obviously it came on the back of the protest from round two against the race one results being annulled at Simmons Plains. So, I mean, in some quarters, people were grateful that he turned up at round three, but it all sort of went wrong on the first lap from a bit of friendly fire.
Yeah, I was going to say too, in all my glowing praises there of Harris, I had conveniently forgotten about nudging the team leader there in race one, which is really unfortunate from his perspective, but also from Tony's as well. That would have, been a rather confronting scene in the Wall Racing garage at the conclusion of that race. And then again, when there was a jump start. But do you know what I mean? He did what you got to do after he made a mistake. He moved on and delivered for the team. So while Tony, no doubt, would still be pretty disappointed, at least Brad made up for that error in race one. But to your point about Tony D'Alberto, we spoke about in the previous podcast about how coming into round three, after the unfortunate experiences down at Simmons Plains, was time to make a statement, start putting some points on the board, and, you know, going on this charge. And looking at qualifying, he was 3/4 tenths up on second place, which is a really entertaining qualifying session. So I was like, here we go. And he was looking the goods, second pole on the bounce from Simmons to here. And unfortunately, thankfully not as controversial, but still from his point of view, pretty disappointing that saw him go from first to last in one corner. And really, obviously, the weekend was quite the struggle from that point on. Great car speed again from the Honda and Tony, but just couldn't put it together. So maybe for round four, he just needs to qualify in second and then have a trouble-free weekend from there.
Obviously, as I mentioned, the wash-up from round two and the race one protest of the annulled results, it got basically, there was no changes. The D'Alberto protest didn't go anywhere. Everyone seemed to just move on the weekend. There wasn't really a lot talked about by the time they all got to Phillip Island. So do you think that's that? D'Alberto had a Facebook post where he sort of said, at the very least, if it started a conversation about things, then his protest, he felt, was justified.
Yeah, no, thankfully, I think it's all been heard. I did read through the transcripts of the appeal that went to Motorsport Australia, and it was pretty bland reading, but unsurprisingly, they've just followed the rule book. A few acknowledgements there of obviously an error, obviously in isolation, not that big of a deal, from obviously stopping the race clock to letting it run, and obviously moving to annulling the first part of the race rather than a race restart, which was obviously levels of detail that the average spectator and TV viewer and fan is not that interested in, but obviously the implications of that is obviously spiraled and led us to the other issues regarding the cancellation of race one as a non-point scoring race. But yeah, I think we can all put it behind us now. Still, there's going to be resentment and disappointment because of what happened, and obviously the inconsistencies with the race two starting grid based on a race that didn't exist. But no, looking at the comments from Tony, I think that was kind of, you know, a conclusion to it. He put that post out, as you said, highlighted still some of his concerns, but at least he was heard and they went through a process, didn't go in their favour. But I think, yeah, now that's buried, and I think everyone's learnt from it that if a similar experience pops up again, we're going to be much more efficient and much more clear around the actions around it. So, yeah, I think we can put that behind us and look forward to the Bend, and hopefully from Tony's point of view, because the Hondas have been doing some winning thanks to Brad Harris, but he can get the he's number two Honda back in victory lane.
We touched on in the last podcast looking forward to Phillip Island about how good the program looked, and it was a high-quality program. Obviously, you had the staples of the first couple of Speed Series rounds in TCR, Trans Am, and then it was joined by GT4 and GT3. What do you think of the weekend of a whole? I felt like there was a lot of focus on the GTs, and perhaps this was the first sign of, as you'd mentioned in our season preview, about how with the Speed Series sort of being under Motorsport Australia control this year, it was going to be an even keel in terms of priorities with the categories. And we really saw that with every category across the weekend getting a 7-mate race. And there seemed to be a bit of priority on the GTs from the Mustang point of view. But would you say that the TCR series sort of got left behind a bit on the weekend in terms of focus?
Oh, no, I wouldn't say left behind by any stretch. I think this is the reality of the Speed Series makeup, that, do you know what I mean, each category will be prioritised at different events and races throughout the year. So obviously, this was the first round of the GT World Challenge Australian Series. Obviously, fresh cars with two new Ferraris, and it's been many years since those have raced in a domestic championship round. Obviously, to launch SRO, their first event as category managers, and obviously with a presence, full-time presence in Australia. Mr. Rattel was here as well. So I think this was always going to be a way to launch their series. So I don't see that as a negative from TCR. As you said, everyone got a 7-8 race on as well, Saturday and Sunday. So there was no, I guess there was no preference provided to any particular categories there as well. But yeah, I don't think at all TCR got left behind or deprioritized. I think obviously it's Sandown and Simmons Plains. They very much were, like, we don't have headliners anymore, but do you know what I mean? Positioned to maximize TV time, and then obviously with the GTs here. So, yeah, overall, I thought that was a really strong event. And for mine, that's the strength of the reality of the Speed Series product. And as I saw them, they said 17,500 people turned up over the weekend, which was really strong and really encouraging. But it's the diversity. Where else can you go where you've got touring cars by the TCR category, you've got sports car racing via GT3 and GT4, Trans Ams, one make Porsches, and you know, the only spring thing of that which will be coming is in future rounds is having, you know, a steady open wheel product. But yeah, I think that's collectively they're the better for it. We should see, you know, obviously a diverse range of crowds there as well because of the variety and the different strengths and weaknesses that each category brings. Now, overall, I don't see it as a negative for TCR. And in a way, I think there were some pretty consistent things across all of them. Everyone's grids were solid without being unspectacular, the Porsche Cup Series aside. So yeah, I wasn't getting the feeling that one was kind of dominating where one wasn't, unless you're looking through the eyes of Roland Dane, I guess. But I think he just cries agenda. So
yes, particularly when it comes to Mercedes products.
Well, I was going to say too. That's a good point. Like he, Mercedes obviously, whilst they currently got a car and supplies parts shortage that's impacting customers around the world, I thought it was funny. And a little bit interesting to see him go on the offensive like that, maybe potentially even trying to deflect from some of the issues that Mercedes are experiencing.
I enjoyed the GT4 races. I thought there was good variety, and as for their first round, some pretty good racing. And as a Ford fan, it was good to see Ford win both the races. The GT3 races, particularly race two, that was awesome as well. A really good fight at the end between Schumacher and Miles.
That was really good, wasn't it? And it showed how when those events aren't impacted by safety cars, which, you know, does happen at different things like that, but pit lane penalties and all that kind of plays out. And there you had two cars right in amongst it. If Liam Talbot didn't make his mistake looping it out of the pits, you'd imagine he would have been right in that mix as well. We could have three going for it. But no, that was great. Great drama and great racing. And that was the other thing too. They both raced each other hard. Like Tim Miles was defensively really good. And obviously Schumacher didn't touch him, but really stuck the car up the inside a couple of times there and obviously respectively bailed out when he had to.
I did find it funny. You mentioned agenda before, and it was interesting that when it comes to particularly last weekend, there was a lot of praise for the GT racing and particularly the GT3 racing compared to TCR. And it's funny that in the last few years, whenever GT3 got compared to V8 supercars, many would level criticism towards GT3 compared to supercars. Whereas then you get to last weekend, probably the same people that leveled criticism at GT3 compared to supercars were leveling criticism at TCR and praising how good the GT3s were.
Absolutely. And it's without being too dismissive, it's a complete joke because you're exactly right. The people who used to complain about grid sizes for GT3, convoluted rules, Pro-Am not being good, and it should just be pro drivers, let's go out. Boring racing, etc. And now the ones, oh yeah, grids are too small. And now the ones celebrating a 15-car grid and saying how good the racing is, but then in the same breath trying to obviously throw some shade at what the TCR races put on. And that's, I just found that like not relying a high level on factual information from what everyone saw. And yeah, so do you know what I mean? I thought the racing was as we said, really good in the GT3s, really good in GT4, Trans Am as always. really entertaining. And then, but as well with the TCRs, I think, you know, you had Spills, you had Clay Richards and Ben Barguana go side by side for like half the lap from Honda Corner onto the front straight. And then you had Clay Richards bombing people from around the outside into turn one, which was, do you know what I mean, really quality racing. And yeah, I like the fact that there are people are not worried about bending fenders or sending a car up the inside. We saw sort of Harris had a massive lunge to take second place on Suter on the last lap into MG as well. So I was like, it's, to say the races weren't entertaining or interesting, I think, yeah, actually leads to a more of an agenda than kind of just judging everything what happened on the racetrack over the weekend.
We saw what's becoming regular calls now after every Speed Series round, people saying, you know, Trans Am should be pushed as the main series of the Speed Series and everything. But, like, I mean, Trans Am's awesome. It's great fun to watch. It's an integral part of the Speed Series package. But you've still got the fact that they're running old body shapes now, and there doesn't seem to be a likelihood that they'll be upgrading the body shapes anytime soon. And it's a very, very controlled series. Like, it's doing what it does at the moment very well, but there's not the capacity in it really for more manufacturers to join in as it is. So, I mean, that's becoming a bit of a dead end argument, I think, which and it seems to come up after every race meeting.
Yeah, I hadn't seen that one, but who's pushing that? Because my only thing is with that, it's like, I don't understand why people are so hell-bent on something being the headline category or not the headline category or whatever. Like, as I said, it's the beauty of the Speed Series is that everyone's got the same commercial package in terms of television. Everyone's got the same, obviously race formats and things change based on the thing, but everyone's got flexibility to with race formats and different things like that as well. And I love the Trans Ams and obviously the driver lineups that they've got with Golding and Hazelwood and Slade and obviously Moffat and Hernback is great. And it's, I love watching it, but I was like, I don't feel the need and I don't understand where some people are coming from about how does it make a difference if they're deemed to be headline or, you know, on the contrary, they're not deadline. They get good time races. As we said before, they get the broadcast coverage as well as the stream. Yeah, it just baffles me why people spend so much time kind of, you know, worrying about it and almost creating issues that I don't think are actually there.
I've long thought that there should be a primary category just because in terms of if you advertise the Australian GT Championship or you advertise the TCR Touring Car Series, it gives you an immediate description of what's happening, whereas you don't get that if you try and advertise the Speed Series. And I mean, whether you decided to make TCR the main series, I mean, my favouritism towards that is there's scope for manufacturer input and manufacturer leveraging with a Honda or a Hyundai or with GT racing as well. You could make that a very easy headline category because it's strong and you can leverage off. Whereas if you made Trans Am a headline category, there's already a Camaro Mustang Championship in Australia. My whole point is, you know, you'd sell something different, which you can also argue they are selling something different in the Speed Series being a conglomerate of a lot of different categories, I guess.
Yeah, my only thing with that is, like, we had 17,500 people show up on the weekend. And that was done through obviously promoting the Speed Series. And obviously each category then off the back of that promoting it themselves as well as the meeting. So I think until one totally leaps out from the pack, and I don't think we're there at the moment. Like you can point to obviously GD3 having, it was a Mostert and Brown in their cars. And then you've got obviously Moffat and you've got Slade and et cetera in the Trans Am. But I'm like, they're still all providing different things and kind of doing it in different ways. As you said, TCR's and got the manufacturer involvement. And so, yeah, I think that they've all got different strengths and they've all got the opportunity to, you know, position and promote themselves. So I just don't think from where we're at the moment that, you know, identifying a lead category or not identifying a lead category is really going to shift the meter anywhere.
You touched on how good the racing was in TCR, and when we came out of Simmons Plains after that cracking race three, I mean, part of me was a bit worried going into Phillip Island, given, you know, it's a long open track. I wondered if the races might get a bit spaced out, and thinking maybe we're better off going to a smaller, you know, bullring style track like Winton. And then from there, obviously we go to the Bend in South Australia. I was thinking, geez, wouldn't it be good if we were battling around Malala?
Mm.
But I've got hope for the Bend now, because the racing was awesome, but in the TCRs, and there's a lot of passing. Like you mentioned, Clay Richards around the outside of Gardner Corner, big dives into the hairpins there. Oh, it was great.
And no, I agree. And one thing that we talked about earlier on in probably the preseason podcast as well, is like, were the Australian drivers who raised their intensity during the two World Tour rounds last season, were they going to bring that to match the Europeans? Were they going to bring that into this season? And obviously the high point of that was race three at Simmons Plains. But I was going to say too, from Sandown as well here this weekend, the racing has been intense. People in putting themselves and the cars on the line, willing to make moves, take chances. So, based on that, I'm fascinated to see what they can do at the Bend in May. And as well, I think the layout will actually help them. Do you know what I mean? Because some of those long corners, like we saw, not to harp on about it, between Bargana and Richards running side by side, you know, through some of those long corners, going from outside of corners to inside of the corners, holding out, really good stuff. So I'm confident it would actually transition quite well to the Bend layout. And we'll touch on it, but hopefully all going well, Liddell and McDougal back. Jude Barguana's sticking around in the Alpha, hopefully with a few less teething issues. But if we can, a few more cars on the grid, should be a positive.
I thought it was interesting race three with Clay Richards. He obviously struggled a bit early on. Like, the races aren't that long, but he struggled a little bit early on with, getting monstered by the cars behind. But then by the end of the race, he was coming back into it, whereas some of the others were starting to fall off.
Yeah. It's funny how, like, there's different, and it's obviously to do with tyres and different strategies and things like that. But, yeah, there's definitely ones who start well, fall away, but then kind of come back right at the end. Yeah, no, I thought that was quite good from Clay Richards. And as I say, he races hard and he races fair too. So it's actually for a young driver who's probably done, what's in it now, probably like four or five rounds. Yeah, it's really positive.
How did you think the timed races worked?
Good. I mean, ultimately, I generally wouldn't care one way or another type thing, but it just takes the unknown out of it. Do you know what I mean? You know how you're watching lap counts and it's going like in a race, and all of a sudden it just goes time certain. It goes from this 10 laps to go to like 1 minute or something, or worst case, it just end it. Yeah. At least I feel it's just very transparent and just, you know, once again, it shows everyone what they've got, and it penalizes those categories who, you know, either spend time in safety cars, or even one point someone made like a quite slow and dawdle around on their pace laps as well. So I think that's a overall good thing.
Yeah, and I think, like you said, it didn't really change the way the races panned out at all, really.
No, sorry, yeah, exactly. I mean, and even on the Saturday, obviously due to the wall repairs, it went down to from half an hour to 20 minutes or something, maybe 22 minutes, so slightly reduced. But, yeah, and I didn't think it impacted the races at all. So I think it's a pretty good move. Everyone knows what they got, and they know where they're at. Nothing worse than driving around and then all of a sudden out of nowhere they're like, oh, it's the last lap. So I think it just gives everyone the same thing to work off, which is good, whether you're the driver, the spectator, or the team manager. What was your take on it?
I usually prefer, I mean, I understand why there's time certain races. I prefer a lap count, and I especially wonder a lot of, I can understand in the 7-mate window why you'd have time certainty, but beyond that, I half wonder a lot of the time why we ever need a time certain finish when on 7+, you can theoretically go as long as you want, as long as you don't go extend past the track curfew. But to be honest, I didn't really notice. They were time races. They were just, it just was what it was. And you watch the counter count down, and the teams have all got radios so they can tell the drivers when it's the last lap, if it's a bit close to time when they cross the start finish line. But I thought it was fine for what it was.
Yeah, you're right. So, and I only really noticed it as well. It was the Saturday, because it was reduced time. Do you know what I mean? The other ones, like race three in particular, had no safety cars. Like, do you know what I mean? It was what it was. They did the same amount of laps they normally do. So, yeah, it is driven behind not penalising certain categories for other people's kind of issues and things. So, overall, I'm quite happy with it. And I agree with the streaming, right? Like, it shouldn't matter. My only thing is, and good on 7Mate for this as well, because they actually extended their window on the Saturday due to the track work with the wall. So it actually went later, which was really good. But depending on the circuits, and obviously the Bend, I don't think they've got a restriction, but I think Sandown did, and Phillip Island obviously did to a certain extent as well. I think that shifted a little bit. But sometimes it can be track noise limitations rather than purely TV time.
I guess it could also be something as purely as we've paid for this long to use the cameras, or we've paid the cameraman so long to operate the cameras.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. It's kind of a lot of logistics going on. And I'm sure it's not an issue, but just thinking about previous conversations, 12 hours, it's looking after officials, it's lots of different things. So a lot of different things go into it. But as a compromise and a transparent compromise, yeah, I think overall, I think it's pretty good.
Entry size. I think we were a bit disappointed to see there was only 14 starters for Phillip Island, which included a new entry in Jude Barguana in the Alpha, which we were very pleased to see an Alpha back on the grid. As you said, McDougall and Marcus Liddell have stated their intentions to return for the Bend, which will hopefully get us up to 16 cars. But yeah, it was disappointing to see only 14 on the entry list.
Yeah, Jeremy, despite, because I think Liddell had earlier raised obviously a bit of a clash with Toto 86's commitments for the Phillip Island round, and obviously he's trying to work away at some commercial things to support that. So that wasn't a massive surprise. But yeah, McDougall, I think, had cited some other commitments and things like that. But yeah, it's it was disappointing to obviously have a new entrant, but the field size remained the same. So fingers crossed we start retaining our field base, and then obviously with the new ones we can add to it. So it was great to see the Alpha out there, and obviously Jude's jumping straight into it. Some of his Instagram posts and things, both pre and post Phillip Island, show the effort that him and his small team are putting into it. And obviously the car had some turbo issues and drive shafts and things, which was disappointing because we didn't really get to see the best of the Alpha over the weekend. But get that right, and hopefully for the Bend, he can throw it up there.
The meat raffle, as Josh Buchan called it, race number two, the reverse grid race. He called it the race where everyone gets a prize. I mean, I'm a bit of a racing purist. Like, you know, I'd rather just see three straight races. Race two is based off the finishing position of race one. Race three is based off the finishing positions of race two. But I can see the attraction, you know, especially with a smaller grid at the moment and wanting to get attention on the series. I can see why they have the reverse grid race, and I can see why it's probably right that it stays. What are your views on that?
Yeah, I've never been a fan of reverse grids as a concept. However, the one thing I'll give credit to the championship, it's been there since the start. Yeah. So, I mean, it's kind of like it's built in, it's there, it's been part of the weekends, they've stuck with it. So I'm actually for just keeping it the same. I think it adds an element of, you know, I don't like jeopardy kind of thing. That has been raised a few things as well. But I like the fact it just gives us something new. And as we said before, obviously worked against Tony D'Alberto's experiences in round two at Simmons Plains, because he said he drove race two with a certain intent and strategy to set himself up for race three. So I like the fact as well that you've got with tires and different things like that, you're kind of building in, you're building in your strategy over the whole event. But also I think like drivers like Tom Oliphant and O'Keefe, who really stepped up from the speed of the Lincoln Co, which was until the puncture in race two, but over the weekend, gentlemen, it just gets us the fans and through the broadcast an opportunity to see some drivers up the front of the field, and especially places where it can be difficult to overtake, at least it shows some of the speed they've got. So yeah, I as much as I think you can understand why Buchan was a bit frustrated after being taken out in the reverse grid race. But yeah, I think at the moment, I think it definitely has a place. And I always look forward to race two. You always make sure you're sitting down for that first lap. So I think that's a good thing. And to be fair, once the field grows again, potentially you could look to remove it away. Do you know what I mean? Like, because then you've kind of like, say you've got 25 cars, almost feel like then it is going to be, hyped, like it's going to be super competitive and with that depth. But even then, I think it being part of the package from the outset, I think it's part of the DNA of the category. And yeah, I'd be pretty happy to run with it.
Well, yeah, in 2022, when sort of they had 22 cars in sort of the first half of the year, there was obviously the reverse grid was still a part of it at that point in time. One thing I would say, though, is that obviously at the moment, the reverse grid race, it pays less points than race one and race three.
Yep, and which is fair.
Fair, but also remember after race two at Simmons Plains, you had D'Alberto saying that, he basically took it easy in the race just to get his car through because he knew with only the half points, given he at that stage he thought he still had the full points from race one, it sort of would guarantee him a front row start for the final race. Do we want the guys holding back because they know it's not worth as many points?
Well, I'd say you don't, right? But outside of Tony D'Alberto's, who was obviously in a bit of a mood at the time, from what I've watched in those race two reverse grid races, I don't get the feeling anyone's holding back. Do you know what I mean? Like it's pretty action packed. So, I mean, I get the point too, maybe from like half distance on, maybe if people are settling a bit more potentially, but overall, yeah, I can't say I've seen that whole concept of people holding back or not, not having a crack, especially when you've got the guys who are up the front of the field who, in race one weren't there. So they're kind of doing it well. And to Brad Harris's point, you can set up your weekend by a strong race two as well.
Yeah.
I mean, the reverse of that, obviously, D'Alberto's sat on pole and then obviously been bumped out of the lead in race one, in Phillip Island and obviously different at Simmons. But yeah, no, I think it can work both ways. So yeah, I'm not seeing enough of that for that to be the catalyst to change anything.
Well, actually, this weekend, the mixed up results of race one and race two meant that, obviously Harris was classified ninth for race one. And then with the half points race two, which he won, put him on the front row for the final race, given that's how mixed up the full points race one results were compared to race two.
Yeah. And I think that's the other thing too. Because sometimes you look at the race three one and I don't know if you read too, but qualifying, obviously that plays into some of the grid formations too. So it's sometimes I get to that grid and I'm like, okay, cool. You're almost doing math to try and figure out how does it all piece together. But yeah, no, I think it does give an opportunity to set up your weekend, recover a little bit, and go from there. I always feel for like, well, even Jordan Cox at Sandown, he was another great example. One race two, and then on the podium in race three, and showed great speed. Whereas on the practice and race one was obviously having some car trouble. So there is the opportunity to recover where you can. I guess the challenge is when you finish 11th, then you are kind of then locked in, which is you can still move forward, absolutely. But it's the difference between 10th and 11th is quite significant.
Yeah, I think as a concept, I don't like it, but I can see its place, especially at the moment with the smaller grids. I think if you've got to try and guarantee some excitement, And so far this year, those reverse grid races have sort of proven it. Do you think the meat raffle tag's going to stand?
It might. I tell you what, though, I do really admire Josh Buchan because he didn't sulk about it. Yeah, there was that comment kind of thing, but there was no sulking. There was no personal attacks at Nguyen. And I, if I'm remembering correctly, he had the comment something of like, oh, it's no big deal. That's just car racing. And I was just like, oh, no. I think his actions from Simmons Plains to here when obviously things haven't gone his way, I think he's quite a good personality for the series and I think has a really good attitude. But so now I'd rather bring back some old terminologies rather than the Chook Raffle, but you know, maybe like the PJ Dash or something. Race two, yeah.
Well, yes, they could roll it. Just call, yeah, you could only call it the PJ Dash.
but get a different sponsor. But what was the old Ferrari Mission Winnow or whatever it was, Dash or something. Just yeah,
the Pack Leader Dash.
yeah, something like that. I think it'd be great. Just a bit of a throwback because once again we talked about it in the previous podcast as well. But Channel 7 doing some really good work during their broadcast, kind of connecting the current day motorsport back to the others. They had some vision from Phillip Island, Australian Touring Car Championship in years gone by. So I think anything we can try and do across the categories, not just TCR, but I think TCR as a touring car category lends itself to some of those connections. But yeah, I think some early 90s PJ Dash styled one. You never know. Maybe we can trial some qualifying races where it is that everyone pulls their grid position out of a hat and that leads you to, you know, a race, maybe even a race two. That's kind of how it goes or something. So rather than reverse grid, but anyways, food for thought. But that would be the true Chook Raffle. But
well, maybe based on everyone draws a raffle ticket.
Yeah, exactly. That's yeah. No, it's I didn't take that as sour grapes from good old Josh Buchan, but yeah.
The Lincoln Co. had a new colour scheme for Dylan O'Keefe, and it went really well. Qualified up the front, ran well in race one.
Looks good. Firstly, striking. I think that's a really nice change. Not that the previous setup didn't look good. It had more speed, so good on them for working through that. And as I said, fourth in race one and was in that lead pack, like putting a lot of pressure there on Harris and Suter and in the pack as well with Buchan. So, I thought that was really good. And fingers crossed, you know, that continue to make some progression. I think O'Keefe's doing a great job in that car. So, I'm really happy with that and seeing it moving forward. I think they're doing a great job. Just fingers crossed. Well, I say this, I'll do this in every episode, but, you know, just looking at, you know, the field and, you know, it'd be great to see someone else bring a Lincoln car as well. Just so they've, you know, they've got like a bit of a, you know, training partner, some more data and things in that car and kind of grow the Lincoln car presence in the series and the country.
Had a big off in race two, right at the end of the race.
Yeah, I know. Punk, well, thankfully kept it off the wall, unlike the Merc GT3. So, I thought that was really, really unfortunate. Obviously, with the reverse grid, he wasn't fighting for the, you know, the lead as such. But to have a tire let go and that's one of the worst places you can have a crash there. But it kind of derailed a really, really strong weekend for them. Thankfully, it was only some cosmetic damage, and obviously it brought a close to race two behind the safety car. It was no good. The other thing too, did you see how long it took to remove that car? I can't remember if it was the Trans Am race that followed or whatever the race followed it. The cars were lined up on the grid and they're still dragging that out of the sand trap.
Well, I think it was missing a wheel, so maybe it was getting, I don't know, maybe they're trying to drag it out.
It was lifted getting... or something. Yeah. So, thankfully it was all good to go. And actually all the repair work to get some between Nguyen, Buchan and then O'Keefe, to line up all the cars on the grid later was really good. But, I think overall it's a step forward for that car and look forward to seeing what they can do at the bend.
The Peugeot seemed to have a bit of a struggle except really Ben Barguana, who, I mean, race three, he was wringing the neck of that Hancher Forklifts Peugeot. I mean, he had the tyres smoking at turn one, and Aaron Cameron was going all right as well in third place until it seemed like he had a bit of a tyre failure towards the end.
Yeah, but he locked that brake, didn't he? He just went backwards like a stone in water. So that was, I was going to say, we'd kind of written them off at the start of the year, and then Sandown, they turned it on and were pretty dominant. And obviously, Simmons, everyone had a go on Simmons. But yeah, I was going to say, too, I think at the maybe a bit of top end speed or something like that just kind of held them back collectively. I did feel for Cameron and Cox at the moment, who don't seem to be able to get much of a break. So hopefully that changes for the two of them. But yeah, it was good to see Barguana. He just keeps hanging in there, doesn't he? Turns up at race three and had some speed. And yeah, as you said, he was having a red hot go. Trying to chase down Harris. Yeah.
It's consolidated him as the series leader now by 7 points over Zach Suter.
How good's that top three?
Yeah, well, yeah, Bucken in third.
Yeah.
And what is it, 22 points between first and third. And then actually only 1 point back in fourth is Clay Richards. Then Jordan Cox back in fifth. He's, 35 points off the series lead. And, I mean, Jordan Cox had a shocker with two 11th places and a sixth in the reverse grid race. Mm-hmm. So to still be up there in fifth place is pretty good. But Zach Suter had another very just consistent weekend, just putting the finishes together.
No, he did, and he deserves a win, Zach Suter. He's run the great little team. The way they present that team this season has been really good, and obviously his performances have stepped up, leading the Audi charge. Yeah, no, I think he deserves one there. And as I said before, he just got pipped to second place in that race one, but raced hard all weekend, and he obviously had a little issue starting from the pits in the final race, but just as said, both him, D'Alberto and Bucken just worked their way forward in that race three, which was really good to watch and showed the car speed. You know what, Suda, as you ran through the listing there, it's going to be a fascinating second half of this season, four rounds still to come, and seeing, you know, obviously we've got the ones who are consistently turning up versus the one with splashes or splashes of speed. So it'll be interesting to see who puts it all together.
We're always, you know, looking for ways to, you know, put a bit of interest into the series. And, you know, one thing Supercars does a lot is it links back to obviously the past and their heritage, as they call it. And, you know, I often wonder, you know, how can we sort of apply this when it comes to the Speed Series and TCR? And, you know, obviously there's connections between obviously TCR nowadays and Super Touring from the 90s. And I'm wondering if TCR should try and link into that a little bit. I mean, I'm not saying TCR Australia should try and claim any Australian Super Touring Championship history, because it's they're completely different series. I wouldn't say that. But I mean, like, you can imagine a scenario where, say, obviously Chris Lambden's ex Patrick Watts Peugeot from 1997 has come out of the woodwork recently. And, you know, imagine a thing where maybe, you know, you show that off at a race meeting, maybe Ben Barguana does a couple of laps in it, or even, you know, one of Steve Hardman and Paul Pickett's old Hyundais get, you know, Josh Buchan do a few laps in that for the TV coverage, just to show how much touring car racing's come along in, you know, 30 years or so. Do you think there's any merit in doing something like that?
Yeah, definitely. I don't think it's going to hurt at all. Like, I think anything we do is connecting, you know, the current series and, you know, the current cars and drivers to that's gone on. Really positive. And that's what I Super Touring, Australian Touring Car, like, I don't think we need to be, you know, too specific one way or another about it. I think it's a positive. And do you know what I mean? Car displays, I think that'd be good at rounds, you know, depending on commercial arrangements for each entry. I'd love to see one of the Peugeots painted up, one of the TCR Peugeots painted up like that as like a little throwback.
Well, yeah. Like, I mean, yeah, retro's in these days. Like, you know,
yeah, no,
all the football codes have retro rounds. Imagine you could do like a Speed Series retro round, so to speak. And not just TCR. Like, I mean, imagine, say, on the weekend, if you called last weekend the Heritage round for the Speed Series, get some old Nations Cup cars out to connect them with the GT Series.
Yeah.
Even go back further, one of like Rusty French's old Porsche 935s or something.
Yeah, no, you know? I think it's a great great opportunity to exactly do that and just connect with it, and also demo laps, or if track time's quite limited, yeah, just do some displays and paint it up. Pity the obviously the Renault Megane's and like are no longer in the series, because it'd be great to paint up Moff's old one, like the 97 Renault Laguna in the British Touring Cars, or the one that ran at Bathurst. And I was going to say too, it's once again, it's retrospective, but it would have been great to, with the World Tour last year at Bathurst in particular, there would have some great kind of crossover between the 97-98 Bathurst 1000 and that as well. Do you know what I mean? Between some of the brands, like the return of, international touring car racing there, I think that would have been a cool little thing, whether it's broadcast, whether it's trackside activations, whether it's pumping it up in the press. Yeah, I think that would have been a great one last year, but I think there's still momentum and opportunities to do it at each of the rounds this year.
Well, that was one thing the Bathurst International could do with just, there's not much else in sort of the paddock area outside of pit straight. You know, a car display of sorts could have been really good. I mean, I don't know how many super tourers are still left in Australia. I mean, there's a couple. I don't think there's a lot. But
it's definitely an Audi.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Obviously and then, some Peugeots. Yeah, it'd be fascinating to see what happened to, well, you'd think all the BMWs, right? There's gonna be some BMWs. BMW super tourers are kind of like Porsche Carrera Cups, 318s and different things like that. Perhaps to be some Ford Mondeos.
Yeah, you'll have to get back in contact with Peter Hills.
Yeah, yeah, reach out. I'd be fascinated to see if he held on to any of those. Just even go back for that. Imagine if we got some Ford Sierras. How many Ford Sierras are floating around in the country?
Well, yeah. I don't know how many. I think a couple of them got turned back into turbos.
Okay,
once sort of heritage touring cars took off. I wonder if any of the Hyundai Elantra Super Tourers are still
around. That's a great point, yeah.
But maybe Hyundai and wouldn't want to be associated with them. the modern arm. Maybe just have to get one of Wayne Bell's old rally cars.
Yeah, or something. Yeah, yeah.
Back to that. Or even if sports sedans are on the schedule, you get some of the Group U historic sports sedans out for something like that. Like there's definitely you could do a heritage speed series event for sure, and make something
absolutely
of it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I agree, across categories. It doesn't have to solely be about, but yeah, you could do it across all. You see, there's the Formula Four series that's joining, might be Race Sydney. I'm trying to think when the first one that pops up. But more, I was like, great seeing some open wheeler throwbacks. Like, imagine if you had, Mark Scaife's Formula Holden, like that kind of livery on a Formula Four or a Formula Ford or something like that as well. I think that'd be kind of cool. So, yeah, I think there's great opportunities across the board to do something.
Perfect. Oh, you could definitely do it in Formula Ford. There'd be, there's tons of choice there.
Will Power's VIP Formula Ford, Will Davison's Valvoline one.
Yeah. Oh, there's a whole array of Valvoline ones you could do. Well, actually, you could even extend that further and you get some of the Valvoline Peugeots into a sort of retro sort of livery.
Yeah.
You know, paint one of the paint Aaron Cameron's one up like a mid-90s British Touring Car Championship Mondeo, the Valvoline colour scheme.
See, we'll send a copy of this. We'll tag TCR Australia in the post because we're just given some good ideas. To roll through here.
We don't expect royalties.
No, not at all. But,
just expect free tickets.
Well, that's, I was going to say too, we can, maybe we push this for what, Race Sydney. That's probably going to give some lead time, October. We can run this initiative for you guys.
Yeah.
I think it's a great idea.
Yeah. So round four is coming up in the Bend in May in South Australia. Let's go. Who's your tip for the round win?
Well, I'm going to get it just because he's, well, actually, It's the two of them. I was going to go Dalberto again. I picked him for Phillip Island, and we're looking good to start with. So what I'm going to go is Dalberto to win the round and share wins with, say, himself, Buchan, who hopefully is back in the Elantra. I didn't hear an update about that over the Phillip Island weekend. And the reverse grid race, we will go probably Tom Oliphant again too, because he looked all right speed wise.
Yeah, I'm gonna jump out of the box here. I'm gonna go Clay Richards for the round win.
Nice. He's edging closer. Yeah.
And I'm gonna go Aaron Cameron to win the reverse grid race.
Yeah. Well, I was gonna say too. Yeah, Aaron Cameron, Jordan Cox do deserve some good luck and some good fortune. So fingers crossed, it's coming for them.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, they're you'd consider them stalwarts of the series by now. And
well, but it's one of those things where they're at though. They should be winning races on their own right, kind of thing. Yeah. Not worried about reverse grid. So that's. Yeah. But anyway, it's got to slowly come back, and obviously for the Persia and things like that. So yeah, fingers crossed we can get them back. Up the pointy end, and looking forward to it.
Yeah, no, the bend should be good. Obviously, it's been a few years since they've been there for one reason or another. And of course, they raced there twice in 2019. They did two rounds of the series.
Yes.
So, it should be pretty good. A wide open track, a lot of space, which, if we go by Phillip Island, shouldn't harm the racing at all. So, no, looking forward to it.
Yeah, and I think it'll be good. Nice break. I think it's 5 weeks or something, so that's pretty comfortable with that time frame. So that'll be really good. And I think we can look forward to some good racing.
That sounds good. Well, thanks for joining me today and looking back on Phillip Island.
No, as we started from the outset, it was a thoroughly enjoyable weekend of racing across all the categories. And I think we've got a pretty similar lineup for the Bend. So hopefully the locals come out and support it. But we'll be tuned in on 7+. And look forward to chatting about it post event.
Sounds good. We'll see you on the next podcast. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.